right, everybody, welcome back to the Crypto 101 podcast. We've got an awesome guest for you today, somebody who I'm really, really excited to speak with. Brendan, how are you doing, man? Things good by you, raining from the sunny state of Florida?
Yeah, I mean, things are doing great over here. And Bryce, I love learning about new things that are getting built. And man, we have a really special podcast in store today because it's one of the newer projects, but man, has it taken the crypto world by storm? I'm pumped up.
Yeah, I'm thinking we're all really lucky. We're going to be speaking with Jesse Pollock, who's the creator of Base. Jesse, thanks for breaking away from the busy schedule and for speaking with us today. How are you doing?
Doing good. Thanks for having me, guys. Happy Monday.
Yeah, happy Monday, right? No, honestly, every day's happy in crypto. I don't get the Sunday scaries anymore because I'm like, I charge in. I know
we're
Monday.
Having fun out here.
We're all having fun, right? We'll catch us up. Creator of Base. Folks in the audience, I'm sure a lot of folks have already, you know, bridged over, if you will.
Yep.
But what started this whole mission for you? You know, where are we at right now? Catch us up.
Yeah, absolutely. So I've been working in crypto since 2013. I dropped out of school, started a company that was doing kind of identity security stuff, mostly working with crypto companies. So, you know, Bitfinex, BitMEX were customers of ours way back in 2014. That business didn't work, and that brought me to Coinbase at the beginning of 2017, right before that bull market kicked off. Then I spent about 5 years at Coinbase building all of our consumer-facing products on the engineering side. So I led all the engineering teams that built Coinbase, Coinbase Pro, Coinbase Wallet, had a blast, grew those teams to a few hundred people, learned so much, learned a lot about scaling, did a lot of things well, I think learned a lot as well. And then I think kind of early 2021, really felt like there was an opportunity to kind of take a lot of the trust and knowledge and context I'd built at Coinbase and combine it with the founder energy that I had. I'd always wanted to leave and start something else and figure out kind of like, how do we kick off the next chapter of the business? And for me, it really felt like that chapter was going to be on chain. We didn't know it at the time. I didn't use that word at the time. It was more like, you know, we need to start writing smart contracts. We need to figure out how to, you know, use more of this technology in the actual day-to-day of the business because too much of it today is like centralized and custodial. So what would that look like? And that really started a journey at the, you know, end of 2021. We started kind of thinking, vision questing, building direction. And for about a year, we iterated through a bunch of different product ideas. None of them worked, but we learned a lot. And after about a year of trying and failing, we decided to build Base as a layer two. And for those who are listening and maybe don't know what that is, a layer two is a scaling solution that sits on top of Ethereum. And what they do is they let you take all those incredible apps that work on Ethereum but are pretty expensive to use. So for instance, maybe you want to use USDC, a stablecoin, to send a dollar to someone on the other side of the world. On Ethereum, you might pay $5 or $10 or $50 to do that. What layer twos do is they let you do that same thing, but now it costs half a cent. So they're, you know, 100 to 1,000 times cheaper. And so that's exactly what Base is. It's an open layer two. It's built to bring the world on chain. And we decided to build it. And so we launched the testnet in February of 2023. We launched the mainnet in August of 2023. And today, you know, Base is the number one layer two by most metrics in terms of users, growth, economic activity that's happening on it. And so it's been a whirlwind. It's crazy to think that we're less than a year old, but already starting to have such a profound impact. And I also think that's really just beginning. You know, we're here in May. We're getting ready for the second on-chain summer that we like to say, coming up June through August. And I think we're getting close to when the world's really going to start coming on-chain faster and faster. And I couldn't be more excited about it.
Have you ever wanted to trade Bitcoin but haven't dared tried? With Plus 500 Futures, you can trade crypto without the hassle of opening a wallet. With just a few clicks, you can register and start practicing with their free and unlimited demo. See a trading opportunity? You'll be able to trade in just two clicks. Feel ready? You can move to real money with as little as $100 once your account is approved. And the great thing is that in addition to crypto, Plus 500 gives you access to a wide range of instruments like the S&P 500, NASDAQ, gas, and much more. Explore equity indices like energy, metals, Forex, and beyond. With a simple and intuitive platform, you can trade anytime, anywhere. Experience the fast, accessible futures trading you've been waiting for with Plus 500. With over 20 years of experience, Plus 500 is your gateway to the markets. Visit us.plus500.com to learn more. Trading in futures involves risk of loss and is not suitable for everyone. Not all applicants will qualify, and this is not personal financial advice. Plus 500, it's trading with a plus.
Yeah, no, I love it. I'm a big fan of everything that you guys are building. And so I want to, you know, kind of narrow in on something that you just mentioned, which I think is a really important concept. You're like, if you want to do this application of sending money somewhere on the base layer, it could cost $3, $5, $50, depends on the demand for that block space. And base, kind of the main value prop maybe is like, one of the main value props is like, you don't have to pay that much. You could pay 1 cent or 5 cents. Could you talk about why this problem exists? Like, you know, my parents' friends who might be watching, they're like, hold on, why might it cost, you know, $5 or $100 to send this thing? And, you know, how does this fix it?
Yeah, absolutely. So the reason why it costs so much to do it on Ethereum is because Ethereum has kind of made a certain set of trade-offs. And you can kind of think about those trade-offs in the, you know, decentralization on one end, scalability on the other end, and security on the third end, kind of like a triangle. And Ethereum has made a bunch of decisions that have really maximized security and decentralization. And so that means that, you know, it's optimized so that anyone anywhere can run a node. Those nodes can be low cost. You know, they're really secure. You have a lot of different versions of the software that let people participate in the network. And all of that's really important because when we're building a global economy, and that's really what we're building on Base. At Base, we say we're building a on-chain global economy that will increase innovation, creativity, and freedom. But when we're building a global economy, in order to keep that global characteristic, you need it to be really decentralized and you need it to be really secure. Because if it's not decentralized or it's not secure, it could be compromised by, you know, a state actor or someone who wants to control it. And that's a thing that could get in the way of building that global economy. Totally. And so Ethereum has kind of optimized for security, optimized for decentralization. But the kind of flip side of that is that at the Ethereum layer one, you don't have as much scalability. It's expensive because there's only so much quote unquote block space that can have that decentralized secure characteristic. And so instead what Ethereum said is they said, hey, rather than trying to do all of these three things at layer one, what if we do this thing called scaling through rollups, which is basically letting people build layer twos on top of Ethereum. And this isn't a new idea. If you look at the internet, this is how the internet scaled too, right? You have different tiers of internet service providers. Most of us are connected like tier two or tier three providers. And then there's tier one providers that are kind of the backbone of the internet that then kind of provide that service to the tier two and tier three providers who provide it to consumers. And so we've seen the internet scale in a similar structure. And I think Ethereum said, you know, 3 or 4 years ago, we're going to do a similar thing. And so what that has meant is it's meant that rollups or layer twos like Base have emerged. And the way that rollups work is they inherit that security and decentralization from Ethereum. They basically kind of build on those properties and then they really try and maximize the scalability. And the way they do that, you can kind of think about it like a carpool lane or public transportation. Whereas on Ethereum, you're paying for every transaction and every transaction has that kind of decentralization, that security that's really high cost. On Base and other layer twos, the way it works is a lot of people put all of their transactions to layer two, and then the layer two batches them and submits them to Ethereum and pays that consent once, and then kind of amortizes the cost across all of the transactions, which makes them much, much cheaper. So you can kind of imagine it like a lot of people getting on, you know,
a high occupancy vehicle,
a high occupancy vehicle, right? And going in the carpool lane or getting on a train and, you know, shooting past the highway where all the cars are driving individually. And what that allows is it really allows, you know, exponential decreases in costs. And so, you know, the average fee on Ethereum for a USDC send could be in the dollars or tens of dollars. On Base, it's going to be less than a cent. Maybe it'd be a cent. And when you're talking about the sorts of applications that we're building, whether it's payments or you know, social applications, that difference is really material, right? Like an everyday person in the United States, let alone in a more emerging market where you have kind of lower wages, can't pay $5 to send money to someone else.
Yeah, right.
But they can pay half a cent. And so this kind of transition that's happening right now is we've had a lot of this technology being built for a long time, but it hasn't been accessible to everyone. And for the first time with layer twos, for the first time with Base, we're starting to see it finally be accessible. And a lot of these applications are starting to grow much, much faster and starting to reach populations around the world that just weren't reachable before because of the cost.
Yeah, I mean, Base is truly solving a huge problem here. And because it's doing that, because it's allowing the masses and large scale infrastructure to now be scalable and possible, it's getting a lot of attention. It's getting a lot of adoption. And so I'm curious, you know, what kind of growth and activity did you expect to see in the first quarter of this year versus what you actually saw?
Good question.
Yeah. I mean, it's always hard to predict exactly how these things are going to grow. But I think in the first quarter of the year, we knew that there was going to be a big milestone, which was this upgrade to Ethereum called EIP-4844, or it has a funny name, Proto-Dank Sharding, which was part of the kind of scaling strategy via layers. And what that did, what that upgrade did is before, when the layer twos were kind of publishing their batch transactions to Ethereum, when they were kind of participating in the carpool lane, there wasn't like anything particularly built into Ethereum to make that efficient. It was still just using the same road that everyone else was using. But with EIP-4844, we spent about 2 years basically building a new carpool lane. And that carpool lane's only used by layer twos. And it's really designed specifically for layer twos with different security characteristics, different cost characteristics, actually a whole separate market in terms of the fees that people are paying. And so the reason we did that is because when you have that separation, just like the separation of, you know, an HOV lane and a regular traffic lane, you can actually let the HOV lane go way faster. And so that's exactly what happened, right? We shipped 4844 in March. It brought down on fees base more than 90%, the average fee, which is really, really material, getting to that kind of sub-cent range. And I think we expected there to be some increase in kind of transaction activity as a result of that, but the scale of the increase really blew us away. So we brought down the fees 90%. I think we saw the throughput go up like 5x, basically overnight. We saw the number of users transacting go way, way up. We saw way more developers coming and building new applications. And I think it's just really indicative of that when you do a massive cost reduction, it makes it so much more accessible to everyday people. Now, you know, even the previous fees that were in the 50 cents range were still too expensive. But now that they're half a cent, they're accessible to everyone, everywhere in the world. And we're starting to see this next wave of applications that also really only become possible at that price point start to emerge. And so that, you know, it kind of blew us away. It's grown faster than we expected. It's really like catapulted base to be the largest layer two, and have so much kind of developer and user activity happening on it every day. But it's also still just the beginning. You know, if you look at the numbers, we're still in the, you know, like hundreds of thousands of people transacting every day. And when we're talking about bringing the world on chain and talking about building a global on chain economy, really what that means is we want billions of people transacting every day. And so we say we have four more orders of magnitude that we have to get through in order to bring the whole world on chain. And that's what our focus is, you know, from here on out.
I love that point because we've seen such explosive growth so far, but there's still so much more potential. I mean, when we're talking about bringing the world on chain, we're not talking about hundreds of thousands of users. We're not even talking about millions of users. We're talking about billions of users. And so the sky truly is the limit here. And we haven't even scratched the surface.
We haven't scratched the surface. And I think this is one of the things that I expect will surprise people is I think folks have been kind of conditioned to the way crypto has grown over the last decade, which has been like pretty flat, kind of interrupted by these speculative growth cycles where you have a lot of price action that brings people in and then most people leave. Mm-hmm. But that's not the way most products grow. You know, like if you look at social products like a TikTok or Facebook, like they just grow. And they grow faster and faster and faster, and they add more and more people because people love them and they use them and they stay with them. And we just haven't really had that sort of consumer product in crypto. But now that we have fees coming down, now that we have the tooling getting good enough, now that we have so many more developers who are building, I really think that we're starting to see the emergence of the first real consumer crypto products, consumer on-chain products. And what that's going to lead to is a much more consistent, I think much more vertical growth cycle where you have products that start growing and they don't stop growing until literally the world's on chain. And so, you know, I'm not sure whether we hit the inflection point where those products started getting built, you know, a few months ago or right now or in a few months, but all the pieces are now here and it's really just about putting them together and getting those products live.
Totally. And I think you guys are definitely at the forefront of that. And what's enabling all of this adoption right now, in my viewpoint, is kind of like the user experience just becoming way better than when I first got into crypto back in 2016. Totally. Now, you know, bridging all over the place. I mean, now, you know, I think that the world is probably not even going to have to think about blockchain when they're interacting. It's going to be abstracted away. Can you talk about this sort of eventuality of our industry?
Yeah, no, I think that that's exactly right. Like, we've all kind of had to interface with the chain, like upfront and personal, kind of like in the early days of the internet, where, you know, if you wanted to access the internet, like, it was a whole protracted thing that you had to do. And I think as the infrastructure has matured and the applications start to emerge that people are using, it's going to be much less upfront. Instead, people are just going to use apps that they love. And then it's going to be powered by this technology underneath, kind of like people use apps today that they love, and it's powered by the internet. People don't know how the internet works for the most part. They just know that the products that are built on it are incredible and that it connects them to other people all around the world. It's going to be the same about on-chain. They're going to love the products. It's going to connect them to people all around the world. And it's going to be powered by this incredible new platform that we think about as the next generation of the internet. But they're not going to have to worry about the complexity. And this is actually something that we've been trying to figure out, like, how to solve for a while. And we are, Coinbase is in the process of rolling out this new thing called the Smart Wallet, which was a result of, you know, a few years of kind of learning and iteration. And really, the way we think about that is it's kind of the final missing piece. It's going to be this kind of new piece of infrastructure that lets people get started using apps without having to manage a seed phrase, which is really scary, without having to download a whole separate app or extension on the way to using the product that they actually care about, which is distracting and confusing and ends up getting people to churn out of the kind of like onboarding funnel, and without having to worry about all the kind of security, complexity, gas, doing all these multi-step transactions. Like, all of that gets kind of made invisible by having a much, much more powerful wallet in a smart wallet. And so we've been building that now for about 9 months, and it's like weeks away from launching. And I think that, you know, of course, we'll have more rough edges that we'll need to find sand down and make better. But I do think it's going to be another turning point, kind of like Base was a turning point, where Base brought down the fees 100 to 1,000x and made it way more possible for people to build these applications. And now the smart wallet's going to bring down the user complexity 1,000x and make it way more possible for people to actually use the things that everyone's now been building on Base.
No, it's incredible. I'm obviously like super, super jazzed for that. But it does spark a lot of curiosity as well. And, you know, new things spark curiosity and they spark questions and debate. And so I think, like, you know, from a crypto standpoint, it's a non-custodial wallet, so, or a self-custodial, right? So I control it, but where are the keys? Who has the keys, right? And then, okay, well, if I want to sign transactions, I have to have a little money behind it. Well, who's signing the transactions? Where's the money coming from? Those are just the first two things. Yeah. And so how should we think about this new paradigm of, because I think a lot of people are going to follow in your footsteps and make their own version, obviously, of Coinbase Smart Wallet. It's going to be Binance Smart Wallet and Kraken Smart Wallet. And all, there's going to be copycats. You know it, right?
Just like, I mean, a lot of people have copied Base.
Exactly.
We love to see. You know, it's all part, about, it's all part of the process, right? Someone has to lead the way and then others will follow. So to your first question around, like, who's storing the keys, you're exactly right. It's non-custodial. And what that means for maybe people who are listening in and don't know is a non-custodial product means that you're in control of your money. Like, you can't be shut out of your account. You can't be deplatformed. It's your money and you control it, and that control is permanent. And so the way this non-custodial model works is, whereas typically users have managed their keys for non-custodial wallets, where they've had to write down a seed phrase and memorize it and store it, we're now actually bootstrapping off of these things called pass keys that Apple and Google have spent many years kind of perfecting, that are perfectly suited for this use case. And so what that lets you do is it lets you store the really sensitive key matter in a pass key that is then backed up and secured by your iCloud or your Google account. And Apple and Google have spent billions of dollars optimizing those things so you never lose access to your iCloud. Like, who's the last person you've ever talked to who's lost access to their iCloud? But it's designed in a way where it's still not controlled by Apple, Like your iCloud is yours. Like they can't decrypt it if they want to, because that's a privacy guarantee that they're kind of giving to you. And so we can basically plug the smart wallet key in the form of a pass key into that iCloud model or into the Google model, let them handle all of that complexity, the recovery, the security, but then let us handle the on-chain wallet component that you actually get into and sign. And so that's this like really big combination of technology maturation that's happened on the on-chain side, and then technology that's maturation that's happened on the off-chain side with key management, I think really coming together to create an incredible experience. So that's the key management side. Now on the funding side, one of the things that I'm really excited about, or there's two things here. One is that with the smart wallet, it becomes infinitely easier. It actually becomes possible, whereas before it was impossible, for developers to build fully gasless experiences. And so that means a lot of the apps that people will use, you're not going to need funding to get started with. Like you're just going to be able to do the thing that you want to do. And that's really powerful because people are actually a lot more happy to fund their wallet once they've done something. Like if you use the app and it's valuable, you play your first game and you have fun, then like you're going to be willing to pay a little bit more once you get there. But thus far in crypto, it's actually been way more like, oh no, before you can even start anything, you need to fund your wallet. And that's a real driver of churn. So that's the first thing that I think is going to change. The second thing that's going to change is with the smart wallet, we now kind of have a way where we can let a user add whatever payment method they want, and then they can just use that and it just works. And so you can use your Coinbase balance to transact on chain with the smart wallet. We're going to make it so you can connect a credit card or a debit card or a bank account and use that balance to transact on chain. And there's no moving around money. There's no buy crypto, then send it to another wallet and then do the transaction you want. It will all just work like one transaction that will take the money from whatever account you want and spend it on chain. And that's using the power of the smart wallet. And then as users get comfortable with it, as they get comfortable with storing more money on chain, as they maybe earn money and it goes into the smart wallet, I think what we'll see happen is they'll gradually transition where most of their money sits and where they're doing most of their spending. So it's actually held natively in the smart wallet. And for the user, that won't matter. Like, you know, it'll still just be seamless, but then they'll actually have access to do more things with that money. And we think that that will be another big driver of usage. So now instead of holding your US dollars in your bank account and earning, you know, 0.15% interest every year, you're gonna be able to hold USDC in your smart wallet and earn 5.5%. And like, duh. Yeah. I'm going to do that. And so I think what this is going to really enable, it's going to enable a much more seamless onboarding where users don't have to get stopped right at the beginning in order to fund. Instead, they can just do the thing they want to do. And then it's going to enable a much more seamless transition where users can gradually ramp into using more and more on-chain products. And as they see really clear value props for them of, I make more money, or it's easier, or it's funner, or I can reach more of my community, or I can send money to someone on the other side of the world for 1,000 times cheaper, then they will naturally kind of transition their assets, transition their usage, so that it lives more and more on-chain.
Yeah, I mean, this reminds me of the next iteration of like a checking account. When you think of connecting a checking account to Venmo, to Zelle, to PayPal, to, you don't think about all the intricacies. Totally. No, it's just connected. You want to pay for something on PayPal, Zelle, Venmo, the list goes on. You don't think about it going into your bank account and all the back end stuff. It just does. And that's what I see this as. I see this as the Web3 iteration of that, where everything can be connected. You don't have to worry about all the tech in the background. You don't have to worry about all the connections. It's just this like one problem fits all solution. And I love that. And so all this innovation is adding up to something that you mentioned earlier about on-chain summer. So I want to talk about that for a little bit. So just briefly tell us what, you know, your forecast is for this season.
Yeah. Well, on-chain summer is coming. For those who don't know, on-chain summer is, it's kind of a movement that we've been a part of. And it comes from this place for us of like a little bit of cyclicality in terms of how we think about adoption, which is that we feel like every year we can kind of go through this cycle of like build in the spring, try and onboard as many people as we can in the summer, because that's when people are excited, they're eager, they're experimental, they're ready to try new things, then like learn in the fall and then start over. And so that's what we did last year. We ran on-chain summer. We had tons of people participate. We saw like, you know, a couple million people get on-chain in some way. We took the learnings from all fall and worked on it all fall. The smart wallet was actually one of the big learnings, and that was a big place that we started investing. And now we're doing it again this summer. So on-chain summer, it runs all summer, you know, in the Northern Hemisphere. We also are going to have some jokes on on-chain winter and people in the Southern Hemisphere. We want to support them building. It will be June to August. It'll start with a build-a-thon. So the whole month of June, people all around the world are going to build. We have, you know, 200 ETH or more than $600,000 in prizes. Anyone can participate. It's sponsored by Stripe, Shopify, Zora, Farcaster, Fleek, Aerodrome, Synthetics, Nouns, like the who's who of on-chain and the off-chain world, supporting builders for a month of incredible product building. And then all summer from June through August, we're just going to have cool things to do on-chain. And there's going to be kind of like one curated thing per day where it's like, this we know is going to be really awesome. It's going to onboard new people. And then probably tens or hundreds of other things that people are creating. And then we're helping kind of get in front of everyday people. And so the way we think about this is that we kind of have like 70 plus shots on goal this summer, where it's like every day we're going to take a shot and be like, here is something that we think can onboard tens or hundreds or thousands or hundreds of thousands or millions or tens of millions of new people, because it's going to be some intersection of something really cool and it's on chain. And I think our thesis is if we take 70 shots on goal or 100 shots on goal or 1,000 shots on goal, because there's going to be all these other people building things, some of them are going to hit. Some of them are going to resonate with your parents, your grandparents, your siblings, you know, the people who've always been skeptical about crypto or thought it's just this kind of scary speculative thing. They're going to see for the first time, oh no, it's just a better internet. It's just something that lets me connect more globally. It's just something that lets me do things with money faster, cheaper, easier, more globally. It's just something that lets me earn more for my creativity. Like, we're going to connect the dots, and that's really what the summer is all about. It's about connecting the dots in a way that everyday people understand so that they can get on chain and they can see firsthand how much better it actually is.
I love it. I love it. And you know, I think it's not just going to be, like you said, us and our families. I think institutions are here. I saw Franklin Templeton. They might be playing around in on-chain summer as well. I mean, these are, you know, a $1.5 trillion asset manager. Talk about some of the recent involvements with, you know, Franklin Templeton, along with maybe any other institutions that you're at liberty to discuss.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think the institutions are definitely here and they're coming more and more on-chain every day. I think one of the really interesting things about where Base sits is we obviously have a very close relationship with Coinbase. And so that means that we've seen Coinbase institutional customers really start to build an understanding of what's happening on chain, what are layer twos, how does Base work, how does Ethereum work in a way that they never have before. And so, you know, there's an England Templeton report where I think they said something about like, you know, something based. And I was like, this is hilarious that a $1.5 trillion dollar asset manager is writing like an analyst report and using the word based in it, talking about base. and they're definitely not alone. I think what we've seen is that, you know, really for the first time, analysts are understanding and institutions are understanding, whoa, there's something very real here. It's not just trading. It's not just speculation. It's real utility. And it's real applications being built on this next generation of the internet that we can use. Yeah. So on the institutional side, they just launched institutional Web3 wallet. And what that does is it gives all the institutions who are kind of Coinbase customers who've been buying Bitcoin, but haven't really understood what's this on-chain thing, a fully powered on-chain wallet where they can now go and actually use these apps on Base. And so we're seeing them do all sorts of things. We're seeing them do stablecoin payments on Base, where institutions are actually doing vendor payments, cross-border settlement remittances using Base and using USDC on Base. We're seeing them use things like Aerodrome and Moonwell and Aave, where they're trading and borrowing and lending on-chain because it's faster, cheaper, more accessible than off-chain options. And then I think we're also starting to see the emergence of what I would consider kind of real world assets or tokenized assets, and really like more broadly, the rewriting of a bunch of our historical kind of institutional financial infrastructure fully on chain. And so Coinbase actually has a project that's related to this called Project Diamond. And what Project Diamond is it's kind of doing this in a fully regulated way out of this new Abu Dhabi kind of regulatory zone. And they are just taking like traditional financial instruments and rewriting them in smart contracts on chain. And so now you can do corporate lending between two businesses fully on chain. You can kind of model any sort of corporate financial transaction as a smart contract. And I think what that's going to enable, it's going to enable much faster settlement. It's going to enable much more global access. And it's going to enable us to take a bunch of stuff that has been, for the most part, powered by like systems that are tens or, you know, at times like 100 years old and rewrite them with software. And so I still think it's early. Like clearly the whole world of institutions isn't on chain yet. But with layer twos, I think for the first time we've started to see, again, that the technology has matured. The costs have come down enough. We now have good enough wallets that institutions are finally experimenting. And what that's leading to is it's leading to more adoption and it's leading to more understanding. And I think it's going to, you know, accelerate every month from here on out.
Do you think it's possible for a layer two like Base to surpass the Ethereum main chain eventually? And like total like use case and like stuff
the
like
new
that.
Flippening, the new flippening.
Yeah, the new flippening. Yeah. Forget Ethereum, I mean, so killers.
So first off, Base is Ethereum, right? Like layer twos running on Ethereum are part of Ethereum. I mean, I think this is one of the things that I see most commonly like misunderstood or mischaracterized in tweets and stuff. It's like people show charts of like Ethereum activity versus other layer ones and like Ethereum activity is going down. It's like, it's not that Ethereum activity is going down. It's just, it's moving to layer two,
which becoming more
efficient. Explicit strategy of Ethereum. Like this is how Ethereum will scale. And so Base is Ethereum, scaling Base is scaling Ethereum. I do think that we will see much more activity happen on Base and other layer twos than on Ethereum. I mean, I expect that for most people, they will never touch layer one. They won't have a need to. Layer one is going to be maximally secure. It's going to be the settlement chain. It's going to be, you know, a service provider to layer twos like Base. There's going to be use cases on it, but the biggest use case is going to be connecting up all of the layer twos and providing a foundation for them to scale. And then the layer twos are going to be where you're onboarding most individuals, you know, a lot of institutions and a lot of the use cases. And so we're actually seeing this already happen. You know, most Coinbase users who are coming on chain for the first time, they just come on chain via Base and they can trade, they can send USDC, they can play games, they can do whatever they want to do. But again, instead of it costing, you know, $5 or $10 or $50, it costs a half a cent. And that's like kind of a no-brainer for an everyday person. It's like, why would I ever do anything on layer one? Well, the reality is you don't need to, because this is why we've built layer twos and this is exactly the service that they're going to offer.
And it's like you said, this is beneficial for Ethereum. It's not like Ethereum's going away or anything like this. Like the gas fees for most layer twos, including Base, they're still paid in Ethereum. So I think that's a great point. I don't want people to get the wrong kind of misconception here. Like this is overall a very positive thing for evolving Ethereum and making it more available to the masses. But I'm 100%. Also...
Go for it.
The only thing I was going to say is, it's not like we even have to say, like, is this going to happen? It's already happened, right? If you look at layer twos today, they're doing like 10x the transaction throughput as Ethereum layer one. Base alone, which is generally the top layer two by transaction throughput and users, we're doing like 2 to 3x the number of transactions that are happening on Ethereum. And so like we're already kind of entering this next phase where you see way more scaled usage on layer two, because that's the whole explicit strategy that we've taken for the last few years.
Absolutely. And I'm curious, you know, how does Base generate revenue? And like, how does that factor into Coinbase's actual earnings?
Yeah, absolutely. So first off, like generally the way we think about revenue on Base is that the primary way for Coinbase to make money is that Base is going to enable all sorts of new applications. And Coinbase is going to be the front door to those applications. And that's going to be a great business. We've kind of seen this already in crypto. Like if you look at kind of how Coinbase has historically made money, the only use case in crypto has been trading. Coinbase has been the front door to trading. That's been a very good business. Now multiply that out by another 5, 10, 100, 1,000 use cases. We think that that's going to be really, really good business. And so the primary way we think about Base is that's really an innovation driver. It's going to create a lot more opportunity for builders to create new applications that users are going to want to use, and they're going to come to Coinbase to use them. Now, in terms of Base's specific revenue generation, the way it makes money is, you know, just like on Ethereum or any chain, when users transact, charges a little fee. Now that fee is way lower than on Ethereum, right? Ethereum, it's $5, $10. On Base, it's half a cent. But Base is also processing way more transactions. And so those fees can add up. A chunk of those fees go to Ethereum to pay for the security and decentralization. A chunk of those fees go to Optimism to pay for some of the infrastructure and to fund public goods, which we think is really important to make sure that we have like long-term sustainable infrastructure to get this going. And then the rest of it goes to Coinbase, which right now we're mostly using for funding grants, doing our own versions of retroactive public goods funding, giving people gas credits so that they can do more usage on-chain. And in general, where we think Base is right now is it's like it's grow. It's like, how do we get as much reinvestment back into the ecosystem so people can build that next wave of applications, bring in more users, bring in more growth?
I can't wait. I think that this on-chain summer, all these very user-friendly applications that are going to be getting built, like you said, we're going to get 70 shots on goal. And if there's not an alt season after this, I don't know what can do it. We've been waiting. And I think it's, you know, folks like you that are going to be ushering it in. It's just who you guys are. It's what you do, building the most innovative technology on the fastest growing sort of platform in the world, which is crypto and Ethereum and all that kind of stuff. So anyhow, we're really excited about what you guys are doing. But I think a lot of our viewers after listening to this are going to want to get involved. They're probably going to want to stay in touch. And you know, maybe you got a community that we could refer people over to.
Yeah.
Where would we direct people?
Yeah, absolutely. So if you're excited about getting involved in on-chain summer, you can just go to base.org. Everyone can be a builder this summer. This is like the mantra that we keep hammering on. You don't have to be a developer to be a builder. You can be anyone. So you can build a community. You can build your brand. You can build your wealth. You can build a new app if you are a developer. You can build literally anything on chain. And so what I'd really like encourage for folks first and foremost is to like become a builder this summer and help us create this next generation of the internet. If you're interested in doing that, you can go to base.org. There you can find a lot more information. We're running a build-a-thon the whole month of June. Like I said earlier, there's 600 ETH or like 200 ETH, like 600,000 plus worth of prizes, office hours, mentors, support. It's global. If you want to run a local event, like a day-long hackathon or a meetup to bring builders together, we also have money for that. We'll give you money so you can get pizza. You can get an event space. You can do whatever you want. And so the first thing is like, go to base.org, get involved in on-chain summer. We want to build with you this summer, and you can be a builder regardless of who you are, regardless of what your skill set is. Now, if you're excited about learning more, you can follow us on Twitter, on Farcaster. You can follow Base at Base on both, B-A-S-E. You can follow me. I'm Jesse Pollack, J-E-S-S-E-P-O-L-L-A-K on every platform. And if we can help you in any way, don't hesitate to reach out. We're always excited about helping builders create new applications, create new communities, create new experiences on chain. Because at the end of the day, there's only so much that we can do. And the most important thing we can do is create a platform so that all of y'all can create incredible things. And so let your dreams be the driver. Like, don't listen to anyone else. Don't let anyone get in your way. Find something that you're excited about and build it this summer. And it's going to be a part of our shots on goal. And it, who knows, it may be that your shot is the one that gets another million or 10 million or 100 million people on chain. So nice. I'm mostly just excited about getting to build with all of you. And I hope you take us up on the offer by going to base.org.
Let's freaking go. Man, that's definitely, that is exactly the way that we should end the episode, right there on a high note. But I also wanted to give one more shout out to standwithcrypto.org. I actually got a chance to see you speak and deliver an incredible presentation with your CEO at Coinbase, Brian Armstrong, along with an incredible cohort of investors and artists and creators. And so standwithcrypto.org, it's now more important than ever. I signed up. I think everybody who's listening should sign up. It's a way that you could get involved in the policy now, in the sort of the regulations. It's crypto fighting back against oppressive regimes. It's crypto fighting back against bad regulation and you know, rogue agencies, if you will. So I'm excited about that, but I know that's an 100%. Initiative you're building. So thank you for that.
Yeah, I mean, this is when I'm not working on Base, I'm working on Stand With Crypto. And this really is our moment. It's a presidential election. It's, you know, a national election in pretty much every part of the country. And so like the last 5-10 years have been filled with confusion, frustration, because there hasn't been regulatory clarity for crypto. And what that's meant is it's meant that all of the incredible builders like y'all have had more confusion and have had to spend more money on lawyers and trying to understand mm-hmm. regulations than they've actually been able to spend on building. And that's crazy because crypto is one of the fastest growing innovation sectors in the world. And America risks losing its lead as the home for innovation. And so what we're activating for this summer is the future of the country. Future of the country as a place that is the home for innovation in the world, the center of innovation in the world. And we think crypto should be a big part of it. And so if you believe in that, if you believe in crypto, if you love crypto, please get involved. Call your congressperson, go out to rallies and to town halls, tell them how you feel about crypto. There's actually a really important bill happening right now called FIT21, which has the potential to create a ton of regulatory clarity in the United States.
Yeah.
I'd love you to call your senator and your congressperson to tell them to vote for it. And then go to standwithcrypto.org. You can sign up as an advocate. You can mint a cool NFT that shows you're an advocate. You can figure out who to donate to and who to support, who to call. You can figure out how your congressperson ranks as a crypto voter or not. And then hopefully use that information to make them better. So check it out, standwithcrypto.org. And let's get active this summer. It's a big part of On-Chain Summer too.
Bryce, preach, I can baby. Feel...
Preach.
I can feel the tides shifting. Man,
they really are.
I'm fired up. It's the fight for our future. It's right now. We have until November. All right. We have until November, and I'm a single issue voter now on crypto because it's really something that actually spans much more than a single issue. It's fundamental rights, it's freedoms, it's liberty, it's choice. It's something that I think everybody should. If you haven't thought about you know as you go and vote, if you haven't thought about your crypto stance and how your congresspeople and senators are swaying that way, you should definitely take a look, and Stay With Crypto is going to be your best bet to figure that all out. Jesse, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate your time, appreciate all your energy, all your life force that you're building and putting into this industry to make it better for all of us. From all of us here at Crypto 101, we thank you and your team, and we'll see you hopefully again soon with some big crazy announcements, because I'm sure you're going to score one of those 70 shots on goal.
I love it.
I'm sure there's going to be something.
Y'all. Build on base. See you later.
Peace.
Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.